Okay, we're going to start here from the Mishnah on the bottom of Dalet Amud Bet, actually the middle of Dalet Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, "Makifet chaveiro mishlosh ruchutav." A person who actually has seems fields surrounding an individual. An individual has a field, and then around him, on all of his borders, there are other fields. On three of those directions, there is a single owner who owns those fields. So the owner of the fields that surround this internal field puts up a wall on his field around, and that permits or that creates a situation in which the middle field now has three of its borders covered by a fence. Then, v'gadarat arishona, he does the first side. V'etashniya, the second side. V'etashlishit, and then the third side. Emechayvinoto, this person who's in the internal field is not required to compensate or to chip in for the fencing that is around him. And the reason why is because without the fourth wall, or without the protection of the fourth wall, then you really haven't provided him any value. The way Rashi describes it over here is that because a bika, we said before, is makom, she'ena gudik dor, it's a place that we don't normally put up fences, and therefore we can't obligate the individual in there to pay for or to compensate or chip in for walls or fences that he is not obligated to provide. That's one possibility. The other possibility that's brought in the Agon that Tosfos also mentions is that the problem is that when you have three walls up, the fourth wall being open or the fourth side being open doesn't do anything or doesn't provide any additional real protection to the field, because as long as the fourth side is open, then the other three walls are not really providing the protection needed for the individual in the internal field. Then, after that comes along Rabbi Yossi Omer, Imamad V'Gadarat Revi'it, goes ahead and seals in the fourth wall, Magal Galina Levitakol. Then we ask him, are we to pay for it all? Now the Gemara is going to discuss, first of all, what's the difference between the Tanakhama and the Rabbi Yossi? And the second question is, when it says Magal Galina Levitakol, what does it mean akol, according to Rabbi Yossi? So I'm Rabbi Yudam Shmuel, halacha k Rabbi Yossi. So the first thing we have is that Rabbi Yudam Neim Shmuel says halacha k Rabbi Yossi, the Amar, the Imamad, the Gadarat Revit, Magal Galina Levitakol, Loshna Amad Nikaf, Loshna Amad Makif. Makes no difference whether the fourth wall was put up by the internal individual, meaning that there were three walls standing now because three of the fields around this internal field, right, had walls on them, and the individual owned those three fields. They put up the walls, providing three walls to the internal field. And then the fourth wall, which is either put up by the Nikaf, the internal person himself, he puts up the fourth wall where there he's clearly indicating that he wants these walls around him. But also, even if the Makif, even if, say, for instance, the four fields around him are owned by the single individual, and therefore he puts up the fourth wall, the external individual puts up the fourth wall, here we have a case where now he is provided with the benefit of having walls around his whole entire internal field. So there, Shmuel says, and Rabbi Yehuda says the name of Shmuel, the halacha is Rabbi Yossi, and it doesn't matter who puts up the fourth wall. Once the fourth wall is up, then we obligate that individual to pay for everything. So Itmar, now the Gemara is going to discuss, what does it mean, Megalgalin et akol, according to Rabbi Yossi? Itmar, Ravuna amar akol, lefi mashe gadar. And when you obligate him to pay, we obligate him to pay the full value of the wall that was placed there. Chir barab amar akol lefi dmei kanim bezol. Chir barab says, listen, the quality of the wall is the determination of the individuals putting up the walls. The external fields are putting up the walls. That's their determination, and that is an individual decision that we cannot obligate the internal field to pay for. On the other hand, there is a benefit being provided to this internal field, which is that once these walls are up, or once you have four walls there, either because the fourth wall was put up by the field surrounding, or the individual owns the field surrounding, or because the fourth wall was put up by the internal field, either way, the internal field can make a statement, look, it was sufficient for me to have to make Kanim Bezol. I just needed a basic structure. The fact that you put up a much more extensive structure, that is your own choice. I'm willing to compensate you for the basic structure that provides security to me or protection to my crops. But on the other hand, I'm not going to pay you for the upgrade or the increased quality of the wall. So the Gemara says, "Tanan, a makifet chaveru mishloshu ruchutav begedarat rishona v'tashina v'shlishit emechavin oto." This is our Mishnah. In the case where we have this internal field that now is surrounded, right, by an individual, and then on the three of the sides he puts up a wall. We do not obligate, according to the Tanakhama, the internal field to pay or compensate for that. Ha, but we can infer from the Tanakhama statement, this harivit mechayvin oto. If he does put up the fourth wall, then we are mechayiv him. Ema seifa, then what about the second half of the mission of Yosef, Meir Mamad, begadar terivit, mengalim v'labitakol? Then if it goes and puts up the fourth wall, then we put everything on him. So it sounds like the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yosef are saying the exact same thing. It's that once you put up the fourth wall, then we obligate the internal field to pay over here. So what's the difference between them? So Nagmar says, Bishlama, according to Rav Huna says, Damar akol ufi mashigadar ba, that when the explanation of the words, Magaliva takol, according to Rabbi Yossi means akol, means we put him up to the full quality of the wall. You have to compensate or chip in for the full quality of the wall placed there. Then Hainu Dika ben Tanakama, the Rabbi Yossi. That's exactly the difference between the Tanakama and the Rabbi Yossi. Tanakama sabar dmei kanim bezol in mashagadar lo. The Tanakama says, yes, if you put up three walls, we can't obligate the internal field to compensate for them or to chip in for them. On the other hand, when you put up the fourth wall, then we can obligate him to pay. How much do we obligate him to pay in that instance? We obligate him to pay up to Dmei Kanim Bezol. Right? That's what we obligate him. Rabbi Yossi Savar, HaKol Lufi Mashigadar. The way Rav Huna explains the fee, according to Alavet HaKol, according to Rabbi Yossi, Rav Huna says HaKol means everything, meaning the full value, the full quality of the wall. And that would be exactly the difference between the machlokas here between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi. Hakol, according to Rav Huna, means the entire value, the entire quality of the wall. He's got to pay for or chip in for the full amount of what is in place. And the Tanakhama says, yes, he has to pay, but he doesn't have to pay the full amount. He only has to pay to make kanim bezol. El Chir Barav, according to Chir Barav, who says et hakol, according to Rabbi Yossi, means make kanim bezol. Damar kol afi demei kanim bezol. Ma'ika ben Tanakhama Rabbi Yossi. What's the difference between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi? Both of them obligate you to place to pay once the fourth wall is put into place. And according to Rabbi Yossi, all you have to pay for is the minimum wall. And it would seem like the Tanakhama can't say more than that. It's not more machmir than Rabbi Yossi. And again, if he's going to pay Dmei Kanim Bezol according to Rabbi Yossi, I mean he's paying for the minimal wall according to Rabbi Yossi, then according to the Tanakhama, what else could he pay for? What's less than the minimal wall? Where it says, it gives a number of answers here. The first answer is, Ibaitema agar netira, ikibinayu. That the difference is between whether you can compensate him for what it would cost him to hire somebody to watch his crops when they are in, standing and when they are gonna, could be eaten by animals. So for a small amount, you can hire labor to watch the fields during that period of time. So Tanakhama savar ganatar in netira in, demekani bezol lo. Tanakhama believes that if they, what he has to compensate for is the equivalent of what it would cost them to hire somebody to watch the field. Right? That's the lowest amount. Rabbi Yossi said to make any result. Rabbi Yossi says, no, there's a fence up now. He's got to pay him for a fence. True, he doesn't pay him for the full quality of what's been put in place, but he's got to pay him for at least what would have been, or chip in, pay his share of what would have been a minimal wall over here. Some say, that, no, that this is the difference between Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi. That what? Tanakhama said, Revit hu de yaivle. That according to the Tanakhama, when he puts up the fourth wall, he has to compensate him or chip in for the fourth wall. Because the fourth wall is the one that provided him the additional benefit. The first three walls, right, really did not do anything for him. And the way Rashi describes it over here is, because if Al Dmei Rishonot Lo Yahiv Le, he doesn't have to give the money or compensate for the first three walls there. Shkray Yatzam Mehem Zakai Bebeitin. I mean that for the first three walls, the external fields had no claim on this internal field. I mean, had they got the din, they would have not obligated this internal field to pay for them. Shayusham Yamim Rabim Lo Yilo. They were there for a long time. They preceded this fourth wall. Since they preceded this fourth wall, and there was no claim against the internal field, therefore, once the fourth wall is put up, the only thing we can obligate him for is the fourth wall, but not for the three prior walls. On the other hand, the re suggests over here is because the end of Chadam, Shoyam Esayel, the Revit, Machay Gadur, Medil Ruchotav, that the reason that you have to pay for the fourth wall, not the first three walls, is that the fourth wall is something that for sure the internal field would have chipped in for. But the other three walls, there's no reason to believe that he would have chipped in for them because they don't provide him any benefit over here. Vibai Dema, again, the Gemara is still trying to, according to Chir Barav, come up with differences between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi. So far we had two possibilities. One possibility is the difference between hiring a shomer versus paying for a minimal wall. The second is whether, when it comes to all four walls, the Tanakhama believes you only have to pay for the fourth wall, chip in for the fourth wall, but not for the first three walls. If they once you put up the fourth wall, then we're megalgel alav, it's all the cost of all four walls, and he has to pitch in or split the cost of having all the four walls there. Ibaidema, makifini kafi kibinayu. Depends who puts up the fourth wall is actually an afkamina between them. The Tanakhama believes time adamad nikaf. Right, who the megalgel alav etakol? That's only if the internal individual comes and puts up the fourth wall. Then we force him to pay for everything. Aval amad makif enotein lo el demei revi'it. But if it's the external fields that put up the fourth wall, then we only obligate the internal field to pay for that fourth wall, not for the three prior walls. Rabbi Yossi Sever, lo shna nikaf, lo shna makif, doesn't matter whether it's nikaf or makif, doesn't matter who puts up the fourth wall. Imamad v'gadar megalgalim alav et hakol. If he goes up and puts it up, then we're megalgalim alav et hakol, then we force him to pay for all four walls. Once the fourth wall is there, we say, listen, you're getting full benefit, not just for the fourth wall, but for all four walls that are there, and therefore you have to chip in for everything. Lishna achrina, right? This is a Gemara now offers a lishna achrina, which seems to almost go against the grain of what we said until this point. Until this point, we've suggested Rabbi Yossi is the machmir over here. This lishna achrina flips and seems to suggest that Rabbi Yossi is the mekil here. Makif and ikaf, ikumenayu. That's the difference between them is tanakavasavarim gadar makif et arivit not revit nami ayivle. That it doesn't matter whether it's the nikaf or the makif that puts it in here, then he has to compensate him because now he gets full benefit of all the walls, whereas Rabbi Yossi Savari Mamad Nikaf Gadara to Revit, only if it's the internal field that puts up the fourth wall that we force him to. Because there it's clear that he wants this to be. But if it's the external fields that put it up, then he has to pay him anything. And that is Meduyak out of the Lashon of Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi says, Imamad Vigadar. Now Imamad Vigadar suggests that it's not the same person that was doing beforehand. I mean, that says a makif. So the subject of that is the external fields. Then we come, Rabbi Yossi comes and says, Amad Begadar seems to change the subject. And the subject of that, or the subject of who's being called there over here, is the internal field. So it's only when the Nikaf goes along do we mechayev him, whereas the Tanakhama says, whether it's the Makif or the Nikaf. So again, this is the flip of the last Ibayit Ema that we said. We suggested over here that the difference between Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakhama is who puts up the fourth wall. But over here, the Gemara suggests that Rabbi Yossi is the Mekil versus in the other Lashon where Rabbi Yossi was the Machmir. Okay, now on the top of Hey Amud Aleph, Runya Akfe Ravina Mabaru Chutav. There was an individual Runya who was surrounded. He had an internal field, and Ravina surrounded him. All four fields around him, all four borders were surrounded by Ravina. Runya also happened to be the Aris of Ravina. In other places we see that, other places in Shas. Amalei Haivli Kama Degadre. So he says, listen, Ravina went ahead and put up walls on his field, which automatically provided a benefit to Runya, who now has four walls around his field, and his internal field is now protected because of Ravina putting up the walls around him. So he says, listen, I put up this nice, beautiful stone wall here. Please compensate me for it. Pay for me half. Lo Yaivle ignores him. He doesn't pay him. So he says, Havilei Lefi Demei Bezol. He says, look, at least pay me according to the minimal wall that you would have placed here in order to have this protection. Says Lo Yaivle. And so he said, didn't pay him. Ignores him, doesn't pay him at all. Have the agar nitiruta. He says, okay, fine. You're not going to pay me for a wall. Pay me what you would have had to hire, the cost of hiring someone to watch the field. Listen, I put up a wall that's doing you the benefit that you don't have to hire some guy each year to protect your crops. So at least pay me that. Yoyevli. He didn't give him anything. I mean, that Runya is refusing to compensate Ravina for putting up the wall or to chip in for putting up the wall. Yomachad have a kagadar dikle. So one day, Ravina sees that Runya is out there collecting his dates. He's harvesting the dates from the palm trees. So Ravina says to his sharecropper, obviously not Runya, to his sharecropper, Zil shokol minei kibura dahine. Says, do me a favor, go pick up a cluster of dates off of his palm tree while he's there. You know, I see Runya's there. Right in front of him, you go over there and pick off a cluster of dates. Azalat tuye, he started heading into Runya's field to go take off a cluster of grapes. Rama bekala. Runya starts screaming at this guy, what are you doing? That's my field. How come you're in here? Says Amalei, so Ravina says to Runya, Galita datcha diminach nechalach. Right, so proves here that you're definitely happy with this wall here, because you don't want anybody just walking into your field and taking dates down. So it's clear here that you're enjoying the benefits of having this wall. You should compensate me for it. So he says, Loi hei ali izabalma. Right, so he says, let it be just a goat. Forget that it's my aris. Just any goat shows up. Milo bayin itiruta. Don't you need to protect against animals coming in and eating your dates? Meaning, fine. Okay, you're not worried about gazlanim or ganavim. But at least let this guy be the equivalent of a goat that's coming in to eat your dates. And you do need protection from animals coming in and eating your stuff. Says Amalei izabalma lachluye bayin. Says when it comes to a goat, I don't need a fence. I can just scream at it. You know, if I just raise my voice, the goats will run. You know, the goats are scared. I don't need a full-fledged wall to protect against that. I just need to scream at him. So Amalei velo gabra bayit demichlela. Says, listen, what does that mean? Scarecrows don't speak. I mean, if you're going to scare away the Yizim, you need someone who's going to sit there and scream at the goats or raise their voice in order to scare away the goats. So you do need to pay some amount of money to have that form of protection. If you have to pay some form of money, at least give me that savings that you are getting. So after the coming to Rava, so he came before Rava. Amalei, listen, zil paise b'may defais. He says, listen, do yourself a favor. Pay Ravina whatever he's willing to accept now, because v'lo, if not, ainu l'chadina k'ravuna libe de Rabbi Yossi. Because if not, I'm going to paskin alocha, which Rashi says, or the Ravino Chananel, even Tosfos agrees here, that this is the alocha. I mean, the alocha is like Ravuna's explanation of Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah. And Rabbi Yossi, our Mishnah says, first of all, megagalim et akol. Right? According to Ravuna, means, afakol mifi misha gadar. Mean that the full quality of the wall that's been placed there. So you're going to have to compensate him for a full-fledged stone wall here on all four sides if you don't go over here. Listen, he's willing to now accept the compensation that you would pay towards hiring a guy to scream at a bunch of goats, which is nothing compared to the full amount of all four walls paying for 50% of a stone wall. He says you're much better off just paying him what he's willing to accept here than actually going to the din and taking what the halacha is. So now, there's a new case with Runya and Ravina. There's actually now, we're going to have five explanations of this next piece of the Gemara. Question is, how does it fit into the previous Gemara? And then the last line in the Gemara is cryptic, and the question is, what does it mean? So Runya and Zavan Aro. Runya purchased a plot of land, a mitzvah de Ravina, on the border of Ravina. So now we know already that he has a field internally to Ravina. The question is, obviously, where did he purchase this land that shares a common border with Ravina? Does it mean internally or externally? That's a good first question. Sever Ravina l'sluke mishum dina bar metzra. Ravina wanted to remove him because the dina bar metzra meant that he has a first right of refusal to take this land, so he can throw, right, he can take it away from Runya over here. So Amalei Rav Safra b'rei de Rav Yeva the Ravina. So Rabbi came to him and says, Amrei inche arba l'tzala, arba'a l'tzalala. Four for the tzala and four for the tzalala. So this problem, tzala and tzalala, that's the cryptic statement of the Gemara. What does it mean? Now tzala and tzalala clearly has something to do with leather, right? And whether it has to do with leather itself or the ma'abed, the worker who tans the leather, that's unclear. So Rashi actually brings what are two, depending on whether you think the gears are, three explanations. The first one Rashi brings is ani shamati. I heard that tzala is a ratzan ani, but tzala is a ratzan ashir. That one of them is a rich tanner and a poor tanner. So it's a rich tanner and a poor tanner says that when it comes to feeding one's family, both the rich tanner and the poor tanner need the same amount of food to feed their family. I mean, they both have families that they have to feed, and they both need to earn a living, right, that is going to provide for their families. So now, just like you, right, want to say to this individual, meaning Runya over here, what do you want to say to Runya? Runya, please, this field is right next to my fields. Get off, because what's the reason? Dina de Bar Metzra. What's the reason between Dina de Bar Metzra? Very good. Right? Very good. You're saying Sholas, but we just learned this, right? Vasita Hayashar Vato. Vasita Hayashar Vato basically says, do the right thing. Now, doing the right thing over here is what? Here, finally, Runya gets himself his hands on a field here where he can make maybe a little more of a living. And here, you're going to take him away because of Vasita Hayashar Vato. You're saying to him, listen, you're the rich guy, he's the poor guy. Let him have a chance. If you're going to do Vasita Yashar Vatov, and that's what it comes along, Rav Safran says to Ravina, listen, Vasita Yashar Vatov is the whole premise you're going to take away from him. You should apply that to yourself, Vasita Yashar Vatov, and you should allow him to buy the field because he's an he and he needs whatever breaks he can get, he needs. So now, Rashi rejects this explanation because he says, first of all, the word tzalo, as opposed to tzalala, means the ore itself, the leather itself. So how could you explain that tzalo and tzalala both refer to the tanners when one word, tzalo, means the leather and tzalala means the tanner? So he says, I don't explain how the explanation could be rich tanner and poor tanner when the words don't mean that. So Rashi's interpretation says no, that when it comes to a leather maker, for instance, Runya, he suggests, was a leather worker. He used to make shoes. So now when he makes shoes, he has to purchase leather, and then he has to have those that leather worked or tanned by an individual. And the tanning process is very expensive. He has to shell out for the tanning process, meaning that it's the same amount that the cost of the leather is to tan the leather. So now he's already, in a sense, he's having a rough time because... Exactly. He has no profit because he has nowhere to tan his leather. So what Runyon did now was buy a piece of property where he could do his own tanning to save himself and make some more profit in his shoemaking business. So that's what Rav Safra comes to him. He says, listen, Vasita Sharvia Tov, listen, let him have this field so he can at least tan and take some of the profit margin back in-house. Instead of having to outsource his tanning, now he could take his tanning in-house and at least he'll make some profit. So that's what Rashi says. Arba Tzalala means that the expense of having to outsource the tanning is so high that at least give him a break and Vasita Yasharvia Tov that he can tan his own stuff. And that would be you giving up your right of Dina de Bar Metzra, which is Vasita V'yashar V'atov. So if you're going to do Vasita V'yashar V'atov, let him have a chance. And he brings a third explanation, which says V'li Nira. The Bach, there's a question here, that the Sotzei Shas questions whether the V'li Nira is a different answer, or really a continuation, right, of the other answers from above. So Rashi brings a third possibility over here, which is that...
So just before that explanation in Rashi, it's not clear from Rashi's lesson there, but Tehillos Sadeh Zuh, from the Sespe Yisrael, it's not clear that he's saying that the field itself should be a place where you can do the actual tanning. Could be that it'll just be a supplemental parnassah. The reason I think that is that to make an argument to a neighbor that he should, you know, lay off the fields that this guy can use it for tanning, I mean, that... Tanning is usually done far away from where people are because it's middle so bad. So if anything, that would be a disincentive to a neighbor. It's like, well, I have to allow myself to suffer having a tannery, you know, right on the border of my property.
Right. Right. So first of all, this is clearly out in the fields. It's not in the city. This is way out in the fields. So the tanning is not an issue over here because it's out in a bika. It's way out of the city. So that's not, the only claims that you have are when you're in the city or it's close to the living quarters. Here we're not in the living quarters. So that won't be a consideration. What you're saying might have to do with V'li Nira. The question is whether the next answer Rashi is just a continuation or it's actually a different answer or a different suggestion over here. That's the question. Meaning that later on Rashi says, what you're suggesting, Shoal, which is that, what does it mean, lefarnasat beito? He says, look, Rav Safra says, Ravina, siyashiyah yishar v'atov, laniach l'runya oto, sadeh, d'achshav yelo shnayim, because they have two fields. And the expenditures to work two fields, even if they're not adjacent to each other, is still less than working one field. And that's exactly what you're suggesting. Lefarnasat beito means give him a break, meaning that now he has another little way to make a living. So again, the question of Ali Nira, that last Lashon and Rashi, is that a separate Lashon? Right, or the same Lashon. According to the way, like you're explaining, that would make sense. It's the same Lashon. And the reason that he's telling him to lay off the field is because exactly this. When you have two fields, even though they're not adjacent, it's giving him a benefit. And let him do that for Asiti Asher Atov. If you say V'li Nira, it suggests that this answer is a different answer. And the different answer is that once he has two fields, he has a benefit. But that means that the first answer has to be something different, which is that he was tanning. So I think that what you're suggesting is correct. It might have to do with the difference in the girsa. Those are the three explanations, or three possible explanations Rashi gives. Tosfos, on the other hand, brings, the Rabbeinu Tam does not like Rashi's explanation. The first of all, Tosfos says that there's a basic principle, Rabbeinu Tam says, which is, Eim rachmim b'din. Right, there is no rachmim in din. If the din is that he has a right to bar metzra over here, right, then why should he have to lay off bar metzra because there's some other consideration? Now, you could argue. Very good. So you could argue, Asitav Yashar V'Tov, that's the whole premise, is that it's an Indian of Tztakah, not Midin. But it might be, and this is the way it seems that Ramban learns, Asitav Yashar V'Tov, Asitav Yashar V'Tov is a full-fledged obligation. It's not simply Tztakah. Asitav Yashar V'Tov is a requirement that you do the right thing.
Well, if I think it's a general approach of, you know,
right.
Sort of
right.
Explanation
for every detail.
And therefore,
right. So to see the Yashar V'Tov will be a full-fledged obligation. That's what you see from Rabbeinu Tam over here. It seems like it's a full-fledged din obligation, that this is not simply a din in staka. So Rabbeinu Tam gives his first explanation, is that the purchase of the property is actually internal. That Rabbeinu surrounded Runya from four sides, but there was also another party in the internal section. And that other party was in the internal section. So that other party in the internal section, right, then sold that land to Runya. Now Runya is a bar mitzvah from one side. Rabbeinu is a bar mitzvah from three sides. So Rabbeinu thought, and that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says, in the Gemara it says, Sova Rabbeinu. Rabbeinu thought he had a right here to bar mitzvah. Why? Because he has three sides, whereas Runya only has one side. So he thinks three sides trumps one side, and therefore he should get the first right of refusal here to take the property away from Runya. Rav Safra comes back and says, no. Arba Litzala means, what? Doesn't matter whether it's a big piece of leather or a small piece of leather, the same torah, the same effort has to be put out in order to tan or work the leather. Doesn't matter, the size of the leather becomes irrelevant. So that's what he's saying to him, listen, Dinah Bar Mitzvah is not about how many sides that you surround. Any party who has a border has a right to Dinah Bar Mitzvah. And therefore, if Runya preceded you and he bought the property, you're out of luck. That's what you learned in the Gemara Bava Metzia. Whoever's first gets the right. Meaning that if any of the bordering properties buys it, they have it. Whereas if it's a third party that buys it, then each party has a right to make a claim of Dinah Bar Mitzvah. And that's the answer of the Gemara. Rabbeinu thought that he had a right above and beyond that of Runya, and Rav Safra comes and says, no, that you have equal rights. That's Rabbeinu Tam's explanation.
You can think that Rabbeinu might have had another basis for thinking, because we also had a discussion of Gemara in the whole discussion of Bar Mitzvah, Tam Chacham versus other scenarios.
Right.
Rabbeinu might have thought that.
But that was only, that's a big question there in that Gemara, whether that's a Dinah Bar Mitzvah. Tosfos learns that's not Dinah Bar Mitzvah there, but rather a Dinah Kedimus. When you sell a property, a priori, if you have to ask me, who should I sell it to? I should sell it to Amir Chacham.
Right.
But here, the property's already sold. Runya already purchased the property, so that might have no relevance to Gemara. Very good, you remember the Gemara Bava Metzia. There was one person who believes, Rashi believes.
Yeah, there was one focus about how
right. If you believe it's a din of the Bar Mitzvah, right, then maybe he has a right, the first right of refusal that exceeds the other parties. But, over here again, that's only when you're coming to a third party that's buying it. But maybe over here, once it's already done, what's done is done, and Runya is a bar mitzvah, so maybe the kedimus won't apply over here. The last explanation is brought by Rabbi Avram, who says that Runya bought property on the mitzvah of Rabbeinu, right, which was where Runya was an aris. We said before that Runya was a sharecropper to Rabbeinu as well. So he purchased a property that was adjacent to the properties that he was an aris in. So Rabbeinu thought, wait, listen, I own the physical property, so I have a din of the bar mitzvah. He just works the field. He shouldn't have any right of din of the bar mitzvah. Rav Safra's answer to him is what? Salah and salala. Right? Just like the person who purchased the leather gets four, but the tanner also gets four. The tanner who does not own the leather gets paid the same amount as the person who actually buys or purchases and owns the leather and works the leather. So what does that show you? It shows you that he has, as if he owns the property, because he's getting paid the same amount as the one who actually owns the leather. So over here, the aris, even though he doesn't own in the gufa karka, he has a classification as din de bar mitzvah, even though he's not in here. And that's what Saf has answered him, that Runya has just as much a right here as you do as a din de bar mitzvah, even though he's an aris. Right. That aris, right. That's Rabbi Avram here. That aris has a din of din de bar mitzvah over here, right. That would be a big chiddush. All right, new Mishnah.
If you have four fields surrounding the other one, and each one has an owner and a different areas.
All right. Yeah, you could have right. That would be very much right. You'd have a lot of parties that could have a right here. Right. So Amar, here's the Mishnah. If you have a wall in a chatzer that falls down, then we obligate them to replace it ad arba amot, until four arba amot. Right. So there we mentioned the Gemara earlier. Here it's clear that hezek riash mehezek, because the wall is already existent. Since the wall was already there, then they've already got used to use the field, right? Or the courtyards in a tanua manner. Therefore, it falls down. We obligate them to put it back up. Now, how high do you have to put up? Unto four amot. Four amot should clear the hezek issue, and therefore we only obligate him. The chazakah is, if the wall is standing now, and one of the parties comes and says, I paid for the whole wall, the other guy didn't compensate me for it, we say there's a chazakah that they both compensated. Why? Because the din is clear here. They both had a wall, they both need to share to put it up, and therefore we assume that whatever was the din was done properly, and they both contributed. So if you want to say that he didn't contribute, you better bring a proof that he didn't contribute. If it's more than 4 amot, right, this is what we needed. The Gemara before said we need this list that we don't learn out of our Mishnah, but we learn out of this, the first Mishnah in the Masechta, is that from 4 amot and up, ein mechayvin oto. Neither party can compel the other party to put up above 4 amot. So above 4 amot, then, samach lo kotel acher. So now what happens if the person put up the wall? It's more than 4 amot. For the first amot, 4 amot, he has no claim against his neighbor, unless he can bring a proof that he didn't compensate. For above 4 amot, he does have a claim, possibly because, right, we don't obligate the individuals to share above 4 amot. Now, Tosfos says over here, clearly, this has got to be a case where we know that he asked the other, or one party was refusing to pay here. We have to have some evidence that he didn't want to pay. Because if we have no evidence he wasn't going to pay, why should we assume that he didn't chip in for the other half of the wall? Or why should we assume that he didn't chip up for above 4 amot? What reason do you have to come all of a sudden and suggest that that's the case? So you have to have some sort of, right, reason to believe that he didn't want to pay into this wall. So now, what happens if then he has this claim against his neighbor who says, listen, I paid for it. You know, you got to prove to me that I didn't pay for it. So now, what happens if he goes in and puts up another wall, right, adjacent to this wall, in order to cover it over? Say, now he's going to use the other wall. So then, even though he hasn't put a roof to join these two walls, then we force him to pay for everything. Now, it's a chazakah that he didn't pay for the above the 4 amot, again, unless he has proof that he did actually pay here. Now, again, this I'm just telling you, Tosu says over here that it's clear, that one of them went ahead and built the wall without the other party, and tried to convince the other party to join him, and he was refusing. So we have some sort of circumstantial evidence that he didn't compensate here, and that's why we're obligating him. What? For the above 4. Right, the above 4. Below 4, we don't. There we assume that he paid in, and then the obligation's on the party, right, that... But it says... Right, so over there, even though generally when Zen Enev is a little chaser, we say that you're patur. Right, so since here that he's Megalidate, that he wants this to be here, then we say he's got to pay, even though generally that's not the case. Inami, Tosa says, Hachaze chaserhu. This is a chaseron. Shu goreim lo shagbiel akoto lamala mitalamot, kadeh shayot lo chesegriya b'shuminyan memenu. Now, the reason that he needs this wall higher than 4 amot is because the other guy's building another wall over here. And we say that he can climb up on his wall and then he can look across. So now, there's actually Zen Enev is a chaser. The reason he needs such a high wall is because the other individual will have chesegriya. Right.
We had Rav Huna, who's Elimelech Rav Yossi, right, that he has to pay for like whatever the wall is. Is it sound?
Right, so over there it's in a bikah. So in the bikah, it's hard to know because there's no difference. There's no hezekriyah. Hezekriyah is not the issue in the bikah. Right? In the bikah, it's simply a protection issue, which is you don't want outsiders entering the field. So over here, the issue might be different, which is that there's a hezekriyah issue, which is until 4 amot deals with most hezekriyah. But 4 amot can make it a little better, but it's not necessary, or you could get away with less than 4 amot. So over here, it's not clear that the same machlokas will apply, right, from over there. Because over here, when you say chesed kriya, you gotta have a full, you can't put up misipas ba'alma. You can't put up a border, you have to put up something that's actually solid that will prevent chesed kriya. So you can't say to him, listen, I would have put up just stakes, you know, little sticks in the ground, that won't work. But you have a question, what happens if he puts up bricks, he puts up stones and he could have put up bricks. So there he increased the quality beyond where maybe it was necessary for chesed kriya. So that might be a question there about what was the previous wall, right? What was the previous wall, as well as the machlokas between Rav Huna and Chir Barav. The previous machlokas might apply there. Person says to his friend, sets a time for payment, and then he says, I paid for you before the expiration of the time, enu neman. Right, he says he's not believed. Right, but we're happy if you just pay on time. Forget it. But most people don't even pay on time. You're going to assume that you pay on time. The guy's going to pay early, prepaid the loan. Come on, that's not true. So Yishlaki says this. Now it's clear. The Re says that this is only true, right, where he's kovei azman, where he sets a time for repayment. Even though stam halva is for 30 days, if he doesn't specify a time, then if he repays within that time, we don't say that it's kovei azman. Kovei azman means literally that you set out a repayment time. So now, so he says, if I paid in that time, Abai v'Rava disagree in Damrei, Tarvayu avid inish depara b'gozimne. They both say that a person does pay before the expiration of the loan. Zimne v'Tarami le'zuzay, sometimes he comes across some money, all of a sudden he gets a windfall, he gets a bonus at the end of the year, he says, let me do it. Amar Yisrael Efrei, let me pay for it. Why? Okay, control the taradon, so that the money doesn't disappear. You know, I mean, it, when the money is sitting in the bank account, they always have expenditures that come up that are going to take the money. He says, listen, I have the money now. Let me just get rid of this loan so that it's paid down. Let me get rid of the credit that I have outstanding. Right. So the Gemara says, let's use our Mishnah to discuss or to approve either way according to Bai Rav and Ravashi. It's not. There's a chazaka that he paid, right? Unless he brings proof that he didn't. Hey Chidami, what's the case here? If he says, I paid you on time. What is Zimne over here? When he finished up to four amot. When he finished up to the wall, he completed the wall up to four amot. So he says, listen, I paid you bizmani. Pshita, right there, it's Pshita. Bechezgat Tanatan. Of course he paid him. Why should we assume that he didn't pay him? Ela, la, damarle, praticha, betochs money. I paid you before you reached the four amot. I paid you before the Zman was up. Alma avit inish depari betoch zimne. So now you see what? People do pay. People do prepay. Our mission is a case of prepayment. And say over here that he has a chazoka that he paid. We don't assume that he didn't pay. Like my sister, shani hocha. Da'akol shafa v'shafa zimnehu. Right, either one girsa, or kol safa v'safa zimnehu, which is every layer is a zman. Meaning that when you build a wall, it's not just when you reach the four amot point, that's the point where you're obligated, but rather, as opposed to a loan where you say, this is the time to pay back, right, then there's one fixed payment where you have a balloon payment to pay it back. Now it could be where you had cases where, for instance, a person is defeasing the loan, where they are slowly paying down, right, portions of the loan. They have a payment schedule. That might be similar to this. If they have a payment schedule, then each time that payment comes due, we assume that they paid it on time. And then it becomes when he prepays the loan, that's really part of the payment schedule. And that's the same thing here. When you build a wall, each layer is considered a finished product. Since each layer is a finished product, then we say that's his zman. So when he prays early, it's not like he's really paying early. It's like he's paying on a payment schedule, which is, every layer you pay me for each layer that I come up along the way here. Right. Tashma. So now the second half of the Mishnah, the seifa of the Mishnah says that you have a chazakah that you didn't give it until you bring proof, right? Meaning the above arba amot, we assume that he hasn't paid into it unless you bring a raya that he did pay it. Hey chidami, what's the case here? If he says I paid you on time, amaylo, why shouldn't he be believed? Why shouldn't he be believed? The reason that he paid early. The reason that he's not believed over here is because he prepaid. And nobody's going to prepay when they're not obligated to pay. Here he's not obligated to pay early because he's not really owing here. Who says that I'm ever going to be obligated for the upper half of the wall? When it comes to the lower half of the wall, true, I might be obligated. If you do the first part, I'm out there, I have to contribute. But the upper half of the wall, who says that I'm going to ever have to pay for the upper half of the wall? First of all, I'm not obligated to contribute. And number two is, even if I put up my wall on the side, who says that they're ever going to, Basin's going to figure it out and pay? So here he doesn't feel compelled to pay. So since he doesn't feel compelled to pay, we don't say that he goes ahead and prepays. People don't prepay when they have a safek, whether they're actually going to be obligated. Right? That makes sense. People aren't going to shell out money when they know for certain that they're actually going to pay and have to pay. Right? So the Gemara says, we actually dealt with this a little bit in Baba Metzia. There the Gemara brought a question about prepayment when it comes to Bechor. When it comes to Bechor, up to 30 days, right? The Mishnah says, up to 30 days, right? Up to the first 30 days, we assume that he has not paid for the Bechor. After 30 days, right, we assume that he has paid it. The person has paid for the Bechor, right? And then he has a chazaka that he's actually been pulled at the Bechor, unless we know evidence otherwise from his neighbors. So the question is, within 30 days, why don't we say that what happens? He got some money. And then he paid it off. Just like we said before, when he had a loan, right? He had some money, he's gonna pay it off. The answer, right, Tosus gives a number of answers here. One answer is actually what? He may never be obligated. Meaning that we're not certain. The mitzvah doesn't happen until the 30th day. Who says, first of all, it's mamon shein lo tovin. The kohen can't compel him. So it's on money that he's not necessarily gonna be obligating because nobody can compel him to pay. And number two is, who says that the child will survive those 30 days and he's actually gonna be chayv and pidyon haben? So nobody's gonna prepay in that case. So if that's the case, then there's no chazaka that he pays within the first 30 days. Despite the fact that Abai and Rava say that people do prepay over here. That won't be true in instances where either there's a safek about the obligation or there's no tovin over here. Now, Rapapa Ravuna, Breda Rabshu, Abde Kabai Varava. Rapapa Ravuna did like Kabai and Rav, which says that people do prepay. Marba Ravashi Avad Kiresh Lakish. Marba Ravashi Baskin like Resh Lakish, who says there is no such thing as prepayment, or there is no chazaka of prepayment. The Hilchos Halacha is Kiresh Lakish, that we don't assume prepayment, Bafilu Miyatme, even from Yitomim. What does that mean? Generally, when you want to make a claim, even if you're a creditor and you want to take money from Yitomim, you have to take a shvua to remove money from a debtor who is now passed away, and his inheritors are there that inherited his money. Now you have a claim against them. You want to take it. You have to take a shvua to remove money from Yitomim. Now, the halacha is like Reish Lakish, so much so that he doesn't even have to take a shvua over here. Meaning that if the loveh passes away before the loan has expired, within the term of the loan, then he can go to the Yitomim and say, give me my money. Because we assume so much so that there's a chazaka he hasn't paid, that he could just take the money and we assume that the loveh never paid him until this point in time. So if you look at Tosus points out, this has got to be Yitomim Gedolim and not Yitomim Ktanim. Talking about Yitomim Gedolim over here because they're real Balei Din over here and it's considered Befanav. But if it's Ktanim, Tosus says there's still an obligation of Shvua despite the fact of Reish Lakish. So Amar Mar, Abad Yifram Yichnesei Yitomim Lo Yifra Elo Bishvua. Chazaka Lo Avid Inish Depara Biko Zimnei. The Chazaka here is so strong that a person doesn't prepay, that even does not obligate him to take a Shvua over here. And that is according to both reasons. Whether you say the reason is that the Yitomim are allowed to name mitzvah, or even if you say that the possibility is that the father gave money, sorry, money, gave money already, that they didn't know about, and that was already paid back the loan, that's why we make him take a shvua. In either case, he's put from the shvua, because the father would not give money to these individuals in a prepayment. There's just no way that he would have prepaid. That chazak is so strong. Now, Ibai Luhu, the Gemara wants to know, Tavu la'achar zman. What happens if he makes a claim after the period of time? I mean, it's past the time of the payment alone. V'amalo praticha b'tok zmani. But the response of the debtor is that I prepaid you. It's after the zman that he is obligated to pay already. So he has a chazak. If he said I paid you now, he has a chazak that he paid. Because it's... Right. So that's the question here. Mi amrinan. Do we say b'makom chazak amrina and mabadi shakir? Do we say miko? Exactly what Shaul you just said. Do we say there's a miko b'makom chazaka? The chazaka is what? Nobody prepays. So now does he have a miko? Does he have a miko to say, look, I could have said to you, I paid it afterwards. If I paid it afterwards, I would be believed. So now that I say I paid it beforehand, I should be believed because of the miko. Does a miko stand in the face of a chazaka? Because we know in a case, a miko doesn't stand in the face of anan tzadik. When we have edim that such a claim cannot be true, then we say that doesn't work at all. So too over here. Maybe chazaka has a force like edim. If it has a force like edim over here, then we should say miko is irrelevant and he should not be believed.